building in Anchorage. Let the record reflect that the time is 10 a.m. Today we have present from the House Transportation Committee, Representative Craig Johnson, Representative McKay, Representative Vance via Teams, Representative Stutz via Teams, Representative Mina, and myself, Chair McCabe. We've also invited Representative Kroc, who was available to come up and sit with us. And Senator Kaufman, would you please introduce the members of your committee present today?
Yes, thank you, Representative McCabe. The Senate Transportation Committee members are Senator Lukey Tobin, Senator Jesse Keel, Senator Robert Myers via Teams. It looks like we have Senator Wilson online as well, and myself, Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, and also like to welcome Representative Julie Colomb to the table. The staff will be assisting us today, our Senate Recording Secretary Lisa Denny, Moderator Doug Bridges. Both Lisa Denny and Doug Bridges are performing their duties from the Belts Committee Room in the Alaska State Capitol in Juneau, Alaska. I'd like to recognize them for their service. And thank you for members for making yourself available today. We have one item of business. The committee will be given a presentation on updates and changes to the Statewide Transportation Improvement Plan, or STIP, as it's commonly called, from the Alaska Department of Transportation, led by Commissioner Ryan Anderson. Commissioner Anderson, you and your staff, please come to the presenter's table, and you can let us know who you have present, and welcome. Thank you for making yourselves available today.
Thank you, Chair McCabe and Chair Kaufman. For the record, my name is Ryan Anderson. I'm the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities Commissioner. With me today, as part of our DOT team here, is Deputy Commissioner Catherine Keith. She's taken a lead role in the development of the Statewide Transportation Improvement Plan. Director Craig Pornga of the Alaska Marine Highway System. He's really been putting a lot of effort and energy into that aspect. Our Communications Director, Shannon McCarthy. And you'll hear from her today talking about how we're really trying to look at how we engage with the public as we move forward with this important plan. And then our legislative liaison, Andy Mills, who's taking care of everything else around here. So, yeah, I'm really excited to give this presentation today and talk about this important plan.
Thanks, Commissioner. We know you've had a pretty busy summer and dignitaries visiting from Washington and construction season, so we as a committee appreciate you taking the time to present your STIP to us and to Alaskans. So unless the committee, anybody has any initial questions, I think we'll begin. And there's 38, if I remember, slides today. So unless there's any really burning questions, that's about 3 minutes a slide for 2 hours. Maybe we should get through the whole presentation and let Commissioner Anderson have free reign until the end and then see how much time we have and ask the questions then, if that's all right with everyone. Seeing no objection, floor is yours, Commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. So the Alaska Department of Transportation, every 4 years, we're required, it's a federal requirement, to prepare a new statewide transportation improvement plan. And I don't normally like to do the acronyms, but this one's tough to avoid, so it's called the STIP. And that's really our vision for Alaskans of how we want to move transportation forward with the federal funds over the next 4 years. One thing this year with the STIP, we really want people to expect the unexpected. And this is a sign that somewhere in Alaska, but it really calls out, you know, we're looking at things differently now because the way the laws have changed, you know, from the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, there's new eligibilities. There's things that we're doing now that we didn't think were possible. One example, I just got out of the ICE Roads seminar. They're doing a workshop here in Anchorage today. And really what we're talking about there, last year there was over 1,000 miles ICE roads that we invested in, and this year they're looking at more. So people are learning from these things, and we're looking at expanding our road network. So it's not just, you know, our typical asphalt roads that are out there, but we're looking at our rivers, our snow roads out there, and how we can expand Alaska's transportation network. So there's really a lot of great new things that we're trying to work toward. A lot of work, a lot of energy is going into it, but we're excited, and we feel like, you know, we're making our transportation system, you know, modern, resilient, and agile. You're going to hear that a lot from us over the course of this presentation. I'm going to start out with a broad overview of the STIF, just to give everyone that kind of level playing field, and then we'll go into more details as the presentation progresses. So we're required, it's 49 USC 5304G to produce a STIF every 4 years. The way it's defined is it's a staged, multi-year, intermodal program. And so we've been really looking hard at how our STIF meets these requirements. Economic vitality, safety and security, accessibility and mobility, enhancing the environment, protecting the environment, promoting energy conservation, enhancing connectivity, promoting efficient system management, emphasizing preservation, and improving resilience and reliability are all things that are called out in the federal CFRs and things we need to be working towards. And so we recognize that, you know, in Alaska, sometimes we have to look at some of these things a little differently, but we're really trying to, you know, keep that consistency across the board. And I hope you see that today as we work through the STIF. One thing that we've really recognized as we work to build the STIF over the past, gosh, I think really just looking and trying to think through what the next 4 years looks like really started almost 2 years ago, and with the new law and how things were changing on us. One thing we're recognizing is that the need to understand where we're investing right now is more important than ever. As I've been in this role, that recognition that healthy contracting communities is important. For example, when we had Typhoon Burbach, we were able to respond quickly because there were contractors working on the west coast of Alaska. These are things that in Alaska matter. And so to look at how we invest through different lenses is really important for us. This in particular was a dashboard that was created using some new modern tools that we've never had before when we looked at this stuff. And this one is reflective of, you know, census area or borough, and how much funding over the next 4 years will be invested in these areas. So it's one lens to look at, but really what you're going to see is all these other lenses that we're trying to build. So all of us, and these dashboards are publicly available, can see how the Alaska Department of Transportation is proposing to invest. And then as we go through the public comment period, you know, we'll hear what Alaskans, how they feel about that. Another thing that's different about this STIF than in the past is we're actually going to show beyond the 4 years. So we're going to show the public what is planned. Now, these aren't necessarily officially, you know, the 4 year STIF that the federal, our federal funding partners require, but this does show you this is how in the sequence of things with the funding that's available and the projects that we believe are going to be coming up, that we want to show people in this regard up to 2030 on how we'll. So that's new, but it's the next 4 years is really where, you know, we have a lot of fiscal constraint, a lot of requirements upon us to make sure that we've got those absolutely tight, and then beyond that, the lack of that idea, this is where we're going. We've also spent a fair amount of time over the past year really talking about Alaska DOT and Alaska transportation and where we should head as a department. Where do we want to be in 5 years? The things that keep coming up as we talk to our staff, as I hear, you know, from rural communities, the urban areas, you know, we have our highway corridors, and now we have this focus on waterways. It's really, you know, being modern, being resilient, being agile is not only something that we want to take to heart as a department and our organization, because we feel like those are the types of attributes that will take us to the next level to be able to serve Alaskans, but also for those investment areas, we want to focus on safety, economic vitality, state of good repair, that important preservation aspect, resiliency, and sustainability. So really, all of those things, you're going to start seeing that a lot when we start showing you some of these tools and how we look at investments and try to categorize these things so we all have a handle on it. Okay, this is how we think we should invest. These are the areas that are important to us, and then we start figuring out how to move the needle in those areas. You'll also see a bigger focus from us on the rural aspects, the urban aspects, our surface corridors, which are really like the Parks Highway connections or the Glen Highway connections, the Seward Highway, you know, really looking at those surface corridors a little differently because they provide that, that integral connection. And then the waterways, we're recognizing, and with a lot of these programs and the funds coming in, we're investing more in our waterways throughout Alaska, and that's something we want to continue to do. And we have some, we'll talk a little bit more about some new designations that were just announced last week for Alaska that are important, that allow communities more opportunities. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Deputy Commissioner Keith.
Good morning, everybody. For the record, Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So today I get to introduce you all to the modern STIF and talk about some of the tools that we've developed to help the public understand and interact with what we have to share as a transportation vision and how that can be implemented really in the following 7 years. One of the challenges that we came across preparing the STIF after going through a number of amendments to prepare for the federal fiscal year 24 projects is that we had a lot of projects in the STIF that we didn't have the revenue for. So we would call that over-programmed. And what we needed to do is evaluate our projects and look strategically at what we could implement in upcoming years. And so for us, it became obvious that we needed to have some tools to help us make those decisions and to be able to look at it through the different lenses that the commissioner mentioned. And that's, you know, what I'd love to share with you today. But it did give us the chance to consider as a team, you know, what is it that we want with a tool like this? How could it be useful more than just a snapshot in time to share with you a plan as a PDF document that lives on a shelf? You know, we really wanted to have something that could be useful for project management to give us tools to analyze the fiscal factors that are related to our overall programs, and also to be able to give us a chance to forecast things such as workforce demand and other critical factors that infrastructure statewide is being challenged with. So these tools help us get closer to where we wanted to go as an organization. That being said, people still love the PDF documents. It's really helpful for those, especially in places with limited bandwidth. We can go and download materials. So I have some slides that we have prepared, but in fact, I'd love to just go to our STIF website so anyone that's watching online could navigate to some of these resources a little bit easier yourself. When you go to our website, which is dot.alaska.gov/STIF, this gets you to this landing page that you see in front of you, and there's a number of tools that are here embedded within this website. The first place that you can go is to the STIF in print. And so our because when we prepared these projects, we added a lot of attributes, different characteristics to the projects that didn't exist before. So what that means is each project can now be identified by not just the DOT region, but the census area or borough, the city or location, the road corridor that it's on, by the voting districts that they reside in. So there's a number of things that now you could filter these projects through to help give a better sense of what's actually being planned. And more importantly, for communities or regions that are wanting to get information from the STIF, they can go here and then get what matters to them instead of being overwhelmed by, you know, what could be 500 projects in our STIF. So it can be very relevant to the information that you're looking for. So for the PDF documents, that's why there's a number of things that you can see here for hyperlink that allows you to see whether it's a project, meaning something we're going to construct. If it's a program, that's something that's recurring, which tends to be an annual dollar amount that stays the same. And we also have illustrative or discretionary grants that we know are being community-driven, that they're requesting us to include them in the STIF so that they can seek discretionary grant funds. So the PDF documents that you'll see now include these snapshot grids. So this is 17 pages. So you can see at a glance where projects are at, they're alphabetized. And as Commissioner mentioned, you can see the 4 years that are fiscally constrained, which are 2024 to 2027. And then you see the three beyond that, 2028 to 2030. And you get a chance to see where the primary funding codes or funding sources, such as a steam carbon reduction program, or if it's part of our national highway performance program, or NHPC. So it's just a glance.
Can I interrupt you just for a sec, Ms. Keith? I'd like to recognize Representative Josephson that has just joined us. Andy, if you want, there's a spare seat up here. If you want to come up and sit, they'll probably see you. Okay. Please continue. Thanks.
Thank you. And for the record, Patrick Keith. If you wanted to take a deeper dive, we have very much increased detail on these project pages. And you can see it could be overwhelming for folks that are not necessarily interested in all of the information that's available here. But for those that are planners and interested in things such as the specific fund sources, we have that information available. You can also see the dollar amount that's a federal, the dollar amount that's a state or local match. You can see by year and by phase what the intention is for these different projects. In the upper right-hand corner, you can see more details about the location and also the strategic investment area on the left-hand side and the geographic area in which it's classified. For example, we're looking at the Cape Blossom Road project, and this is an economic vitality project to support infrastructure development up in Kotzebue. We do get asked frequently to support community-driven projects or discretionary grant applications, and this is we wanted to be sure not to confuse the public that when we are including projects such as this in our SIF, it doesn't mean that there's federal funding available to make that project happen. So we have bright red text to say that it's sponsored by a local government. We mentioned that it's an estimate for illustrative purposes, meaning that we're eager to support these communities to help get these projects going, they're needed projects, and we're right now until it has actual revenue identified, it'll be seen in this manner. I tend to get overexcited talking about Jewel, so I apologize if we get in the weeds, somebody throw something at me if it's a little too much.
Are you going to be on this website for a while?
One more.
Okay. I was just going to say that a couple of folks are out of view of this about the screen that we have. So can you see that? Okay.
Okay. So that provides you the opportunity to have things in print. You can take those and travel wherever you're going with them. If you want to see something that's interactive, you can click here for these interactive tables. And this is where we're seeing the public have a lot of interest because of the capabilities. It's just like an Excel table, a little bit prettier, easier to see. You can scroll from left to right. This is a summary table, so there's just a limited number of columns, but it gives you the advantage of filtering, meaning in the upper left-hand corner, if you wanted to take a location and you wanted to pull up, for example, projects that are in the Anchorage area, then you can get a list that's specific to you. You can filter beyond that if you want to look at construction here. You can also sort by dollar amount. For example, we wanted to see the most expensive project that's going to be happening in the Anchorage area. So it gives us a chance to have a fine view in which to look at these projects. Like, are we making the right decisions? Are we missing things? And how are Alaskans going to be impacted by these investments? Some people like to have more information available to them. So we have another more detailed view, which has probably 20 different columns. And it includes things like the funding category. It includes the House districts, the Senate districts. It includes our strategic investment areas. So again, for filtering, you have the opportunity to really go to town and play with this information. Some people like to download it into Excel, and you have that ability here, so you can take this and save it. And for the data scientists and all of us, you can have that and work with it as you want to. The last tool in the toolbox to share on this STIP process is the interactive dashboard. I think all of us understand that it's a lot to understand how we're investing $6.3 billion and to be able to make sense of it or tell a story. It really helps to have a dashboard to put that information in a way that's useful for us. So that's what we've attempted to do here with these dashboards. So as Commissioner mentioned, the geography and the strategic investment areas, you can see by percentages across the state how we are investing. Because it's interactive, you can scroll over them and get the dollar amounts. More information is available as you scroll down. If you wanted to get information on a specific project or program, for example, we could click on the Frontier Roads, Trails, and Bridges program. Then it pops up just more detail for you to understand what year the money is programmed for and get information about the scope and other important factors. So there's a lot of different dashboards available. So if anyone was interested in the national highway, like what are we doing on our corridors, you can now see specifically how much money we're spending on different corridors around the state, and that hasn't been available before in how we're classifying our projects. So this helps us when we want to compare what we're investing along our corridors versus, you know, what we're investing in our communities, not necessarily as part of the national highway system. So separating those out allows us to have a bit better apples-to-apples comparison when we're looking at equitable distribution of the funds and ensuring that we are investing in key areas that we need to. So, like I mentioned, lots of tools. And the last one that Shannon McCarthy, our communications director, is going to talk to is our engagement. And the other thing that our teams really wanted to have as part of this process was the ability to get bi-directional feedback with the public. And so through an interactive map, which is GIS enabled, people can scroll around the state spatially, see where projects are at, and then they can pull it up and then begin commenting on the specific projects. And those project comments are transparent. So when you leave a comment, the entire state sees it. And so you get a chance, it's not in someone's email in our state, you have the chance to be very transparent and responding to those comments, and those responses are visible publicly, and Shannon will have a lot more to discuss about that. So with that, I want to mention a couple things just about the fiscal constraint component of our STIP, which is really a crucial part here. What this STIP allows us to do, and one of our goals was to find a better way to combine our statewide legislative budget process with our federal funding allocations so that we can merge the two a bit more seamlessly. So within the STIP, we wanted to have the greatest flexibility possible and allow for the capital budget to have line item allocations for the project as has happened in the past couple of years. So with our STIP, it's important to have that understanding that we do have to balance by fund program by year. So that means for us, we have probably close to 45 different fund programs, and we had to balance out all of these projects by year by fund program. And so it's just an interesting math exercise, which fortunately was made possible with the tools that we have. And there's a number of programs, such as the National Highway Program and our Surface Transportation Program, that the red lines that are going off to the left, that just indicates that we have more projects budgeted than we actually have the revenue for right now through our federal formula funds. That allows us to be clear about what we're proposing and then seek other financing, such as discretionary grants, to help add additional revenue to get all of those projects completed. You can see our revenue is in the pie chart here. We have, in the next 4 years, $3.87 billion in federal formula funds through our federal highways, and then we have to go along with that category called other federal funds, and that's $637 million. That's money that's from our discretionary grant awards that we've received, such as our Federal Transit Administration Rural Ferry Fund program. It also includes our emergency relief funds that we get through federal highways. So other federal funds is a significant amount, and we hope that that's going to be increasing as we strive to get more projects. You also see our match here, which is listed at $580 million. That includes not only state match, but also the local match that areas like the MPOs and the FAST contribute to their programs. Now, as we look at how we invest, the tools that we shared with you do allow us to look at the strategic investment areas. But one component of the SIP that's different is just the general simplification. We have approximately 209 projects and programs listed in the SIP. That's a substantial reduction from what you may usually see in our SIP, which is closer to 400. So here we took a number of projects and programs that were broken out, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later on. But instead of having five or six individual projects with smaller amounts of money, we wanted to facilitate a strategic approach to how we're managing these funds so that similar people are managing the funds and doing what we can to leverage different projects together where possible so that we can do more with the money that we have available to us. So the items on the left in the capital budget allocations, these were approved by the legislature, SFY24 budget. These are all line items which we needed to add into our SIP. They were not necessarily included in our SIP prior to that. So instead of having individual line items such as for ICE roads or our statewide wayside improvement program, those are combined into frontier roads, trails, and bridges. So we're completing all of these projects and we have the line item details for transparency and accountability with our capital budget. In our SIP, though, we're simplifying it so that we can have this programmatic approach to implementing these individual projects. And finally, I think through our tour of our tools that are available online, you could see how you could filter where geographically the monies are being invested around the state. But what's helpful here is that you can look at where we're investing, say, rural Alaska, and then you can take it a step further to understand what are the strategic investment areas in rural Alaska that we're investing in. Or you can say the same thing for waterways. One thing that we had noticed is that we weren't investing with safety necessarily in mind in our waterways. So understanding, you know, is there a role there for the department in providing safety in the waterways? And if there isn't, then we don't need to worry about it, but we did have a gap there that was identifiable. So it just lets us have these conversations. You can see economic vitality is in the lower right-hand side pie chart. So you can see generally where we're investing, urban versus rural, but then you can also break it down by census area and just get much more granular detail. With that, I'm going to pause and ask our communications director, Shannon McCarthy, to come on. For the record, Shannon McCarthy, I work for DOT, DF, and I'm a communications director. One of the things that we started to think about when the IIJA, the infrastructure bill, was being deliberated and looked like it was going to pass, is we asked ourselves, what is our public dialogue? Like, are we really, do we have a positive relationship with the public, and are we really hearing from them? And I think the answer came back is we have a lot of work to do. So one of the things that we did immediately after the infrastructure bill passed was we released a public opinion survey. It was just a really simple survey. It's four questions, two were multiple choice, two were open-ended. We were asking the public, how are you using the transportation network now? What are your priorities, and where do you see it in 20 years? And we advertised it on social media and did a press release. So pretty inexpensive, low-impact way to get the word out. But we were really highly successful. 1,700 respondents, 3,000 comments. It was a lot to read through, but it was really, I think, our first opening salvo to the public. I really want to hear from we know that the infrastructure funding, could be a game changer on all levels of how we deliver transportation in Alaska. So from that point forward, we really stepped up our presentation game. I think the commissioner did at least 30, and quickly looked through his 2022 calendar, and I counted at least 30 formal presentations. And we started to use different tools. So during the presentation, we would also have a mention here, and we would ask, people who were talking about the infrastructure bill, what are your priorities? And for different organizations, it really proved to be valuable. obviously doing listening sessions, meeting people where they're at town halls, at community centers, at their work if they want us to come and present. And then, of course, always using those, state-of-the-art modern platforms, because a lot has become available to us and to the public over the last 3 years, and there's no reason for us to go back to, an in-person meeting, writing a comment on a paper type situation. Of course, DOT also, we also develop best practices. We want to connect with the community on multiple levels. So, of course, this is a great example. We want to go right to lawmakers and present. We also want to make sure that we're doing those town halls and having those informal meetings so that we're meeting with people throughout the community. We also started to establish feedback groups. Mentimeters was a good example, but for this step in particular, we're letting people put their comments down right there, and it shows up right in front of them, and then so everyone can see the questions that are being asked or the comments that are made. When we respond, we will respond in writing and right there on the website so that people can see what information we're sharing as well. Oh, I should back up and just let you know, when we do go out and do a listening session or meeting, we do try to write up what we heard and then provide that back to the organization whenever possible, so that it establishes that feedback. So if we misheard or misunderstood, they'll know right away. We'll be able to continue that dialogue. And then, of course, best practices, we do try to meet with people in person if possible, but also virtually or telephonically, wherever people are available, we want to meet them at. And then good engagement is, we also established, that it's community centered, it's culturally sensitive. We don't want to be the organization that holds the most important meetings on the opening day of census season, for example. We want to make sure our communication is ongoing and that it's transparent. We're providing that when we hear an organization, we want to make sure that we're providing that feedback to them. This is what we heard. This is how we're.
Good pause for just a second. I'd like to recognize that Representative Jesse Sumner and Representative Maxine Eibert have joined us on Teams.
Thanks. For the record, Shannon McCarthy. Talk about the SIP as it is right now. We have pretty excited about these numbers. As of yesterday, I checked, we had over 10,000 website views. We're pushing that website address out on multiple platforms, so we're seeing some success there. We also have 258 comments. Of course, I wanted it to be higher, but I was told by a planner just yesterday, they're like, oh, Shannon, the majority of the comments will come in the last 3 days. So I do expect that number to up quite a bit. We did do a series of press releases, and of course, our target is the media, but a lot of people have joined that listserv. So I checked on those numbers, and those press releases were opened over 6,000 times. So definitely, I should mention that we are happy that our press releases opened by over 10% of the people, and our open rate was 42 to 43% on that series of press releases. So really successful there. Of course, we also have a subscriber list that we sent out on. We sent out some traditional mail. And then over the last 2 weeks, our planning staff has really been working their list, their communities, the tribes, and even the non-government organizations such as Senior Transit Services and the advocacy groups, making sure that we're reaching out to them because they have a unique perspective to share as well. And doing a lot of interesting stuff. Of course, we're open to improving that, changing that, making sure we're expanding that outreach. We have a class. And I guess that's what I wanted to talk about. That first round, we had a plan. Obviously, the press releases gave us some earned media. We did the regulatory notices on the online public notice system, legal ads. Incidentally, our social media, which is typically our most successful way to reach people, was not particularly successful in this case. And I think it's because the SIP can be kind of a dry subject. So while that hasn't been as wildly successful, we have noticed that while people may not comment on the post itself, they are clicking that link right to the website. They're like, oh, okay, I can go there. So we're probably getting more action on the website itself, which is what we want. Second round, after we finish that initial, we kind of looked around and said, what are we missing? And one of the requests was some tutorial videos, which we posted on the website, or how-to guides, and of course, that direct contact with our local government that those planning staff are doing right now. We also have started our tribal consultation, and as of last night, I got my radio PSAs out. And those are really targeted toward rural Alaska, where some of our traditional press releases aren't as effective. And then what's next? If you have something that I've missed or something that you could recommend to the department, I would love to hear about that. We are not perfect, and we're still growing and learning about how to reach the public and create that dialogue. And with that, I just wanted to emphasize that DOT really does welcome all public comment, positive or negative. We hate one project, we love another, we want to hear that. Staff is, of course, reading content as it comes in, reading the comments as they are coming in, and super interesting stuff. And then once the comment period closes, of course, we'll complete that review, make adjustments to the SIP, and then respond with that transparency. I really want to emphasize the dialogue will not stop at the end of the public comment period, just September 3rd. We want to continue to hear from people, and of course, the SIP is the start of a four-year process. There'll be lots of adjustments along the way, particularly if we're able to capture additional federal dollars. We'll do amendments, and we'll start this process all the time. So with that, turn it back over to the commissioner.
Yeah, thank you, Shannon. For the record, Commissioner Anderson. I'm really proud of the work Shannon and her team are doing for the engagement and really trying to reach out. We're, you know, every tool we've got that we can think of, we're trying. So but it's really true that if there's other ideas out there, I think in today's world with all this technology and the way people are changing the way they communicate almost all the time, these will be challenges for us, but we're showing some good metrics on success. And so I'm really excited about that. Next up is a discussion about program and projects. And that's really, you know, a core of what DOT does is projects. But what we've been looking at a little bit harder lately as we moved into this new SIP with our programs. And one thing we recognize is having some ideas of what success in some of these programs. You know, we have the Highway Safety Improvement Program, which is a big safety program for us. How are we measuring if we're moving the needle? You know, are we getting where we want to go? And where do we want to be on that? We have a new strategic highway safety plan that just came out. It's going to be released to the public very soon. That'll be a big piece of how we measure. But programs in that respect, is really, are we investing in the right areas in these programs, and are we moving them?
For the record, Catherine Keith. So we mentioned a little bit earlier that there are a number of programs and projects in the previous SIP that have been consolidated for the sake of overall systematic program management of these key areas. And so we highlighted four examples of where that's the case. So we can start off with data modernization and innovation, and we look forward to being able to offer additional testimony coming up here, but we have a new office within the department that is called DMIO, Data Modernization and Innovation, and recognizing that this was becoming front and center, not only nationwide, but for our state to be able to take all of our data systems and put it into a prioritized office where they can consolidate information and then help provide training to our staff so that we can see where the future-proof for on the data side. So our department, we had a number of programs, including ITS, the Intelligent Transportation Services, ITS, and this was a smaller program that we had broken out into regions. And so here it'll now be part of DMIO, still supporting the regions and supporting the project managers in the regions, but also having this overall umbrella strategy to provide training and support for all of these. This will include our roadside weather information, RWIS. It also includes our roadway data collection and other performance tracking efforts. So we're really excited about this. We're looking ahead at generative AI and how that can help us with our asset management program. And we look forward to seeing some great things here. Overall, it'll help us provide information and be more transparent when we have all of our information in one platform. So our pavement and bridge program, this doesn't change what the public's going to see with the program at all. Right now we have our central, our south coast, and our northern region has a number of projects that they identify every year as part of our pavement and bridge program, and those will be broken out as the line items in our proposed SIP, or our proposed capital budget. Here we're going to provide some support to the program manager so that we can have an overall, another dashboard, so to speak, about how this program is doing, and then have flexibility within the region where it's not going back to federal highways and having changes requested within the program, but we can do that ourselves within a simplified, consolidated program. And it's the same thing with our highway safety improvement program. So the only difference there is, being broken out in different regions, it's a centralized program which will be supported to help the regions with the project delivery. And our ADA helps us with our compliance and accessibility. And we have a solid team here in Anchorage that will continue supporting this program as they always have.
And Commissioner Anderson, for the record, I would want to make one more comment on the Data Modernization and Innovation Office. It was probably 3 months ago, maybe a little longer, that the governor gave a speech, and he told everybody, don't be a dodo. And what he was getting at is, you know, all what happened with the dodo bird. We don't want to be a dodo. So that's where we're trying to catch up on modernization, making sure we're on the technology side right now. For new programs, these are all I believe are very exciting. So we're establishing some new programs, and some of them we're just taking, as Deputy Commissioner Keith said before, other programs or projects that have been in other in the capital budget and other things, and we're consolidating them to give us that opportunity to say, hey, this is a program. It's for this purpose. How are we moving the needle? So one is the Frontier Roads, Trails, and Bridges program, and this is really surface transportation links for Alaska's frontier, is how we're saying it. So these are when we go out into rural Alaska, we go to these places where, you know, DOT a lot of times goes out and we have our standard specs and our road standards that may not be exactly what is needed. We know that people travel different in rural areas, and if we can stretch our dollars in rural areas, we can build more roads versus maybe a small segment of road that's built to a certain road standard that's for, you know, in urban Alaska. That will be a positive. So we're talking about things, and this is where the program approach, I think, is exciting, of state-specific road standards is something in the law, that in the new infrastructure law, that we can do as part of our stewardship and oversight agreements with the Federal Highway Administration. And so we're coming up, but where all states are going to renew their stewardship and oversight agreements, and this is something we want to approach our federal funding partners with, is, hey, a new state standard, frontier road standard. So that's, we're working towards that. We also will kind of capture ice roads and snow roads here, because that is that rural network that's just different, right? We travel on ice. We travel across the snow. Bridges, you know, when we get into rural areas, you know, there's an ATV bridge. Can we do that? Because that's a big cost savings if we're able to start looking at those things. We can do more with less. And then also we're going to capture some of our wayside programs here. These were things that, you know, we have a capital budget in 2024, and we feel like, okay, this is kind of access to Alaska's frontier. Wayside is a way we can do that. Another program that we're looking at is the Rural Community Connections, and this is really trying to take a look in rural Alaska at our communities and where these connections can really do things like reduce the cost of living, stimulate economic development, increase the quality of life. One thing I've noticed a lot traveling around, there's a lot of communities out there that are making big investments in energy. So you'll go to some of these rural communities, even up above the Arctic Circle, they're investing in solar. Well, an intertie with adjacent communities provides an ability to, you know, move that energy, and roads can help with that. So looking at those types of things, you know, it's just beyond people, fuel, and freight. We're looking at energy, looking at data. We had a conversation yesterday with the President Biden's infrastructure coordinator about broadband and how important it is in road corridors with broadband. And so these are all things I think we can work together on. Rural housing roads, that's one. I think, you know, there's so many communities out there that are in a housing crisis. Can DOT help? And one thing we keep hearing over and over, there's just no infrastructure to even get, you know, to where the housing locations are. And so starting to look at that as a program and how that goes, we're talking to the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and we'll be reaching out to other partners to understand more what we can do there. And then, of course, the waterways program. I'll let Deputy Commissioner Keith speak to that one.
For the record, Catherine Keith. And given how critical the waterways are for a healthy economy here in Alaska, we wanted to be sure that the investments that we were making reflected that. And so you'll see in our statewide transportation improvement program with a STIP that we are investing approximately 14.5% of those funds to support the waterways and infrastructure along the waterways. And one of the initiatives that we began about a year ago was applying to become a designated National Marine Highway Route. This is done through the U.S. Department of Transportation's Maritime Administration. They have America's Marine Highway, AMH, to be misconstrued with our AMHS, but that has support and financial support to communities that are along a nationally designated marine highway route. We had one before, but it went along up through southeast and down the Aleutians, and that's where it stopped. So now our newly designated M11 goes that same route, but then it extends north and goes all the way up above Kotzebue and Usiagvik and over to Canada, and it includes our navigable waterways, riverine waterways. So communities along those routes are now eligible. They can apply for funding through the National Marine Highway Program, and there's other services and technical support that they're allowed. So we're really excited about that approval, which just came through last week. Mm-hmm. In order to make our very excited program happen over the upcoming years, we want to make sure that we are improving our ways of working. Commissioner mentioned that we're trying to be modern, agile, and resilient, and so we want to be sure that with our projects and how we're delivering our projects, we're doing the same thing. So we're excited to talk about our Transportation X, or TRX for short, as a pilot program. It's something we've been working on over a number of months to identify techniques through all phases of project delivery that'll help us, you know, reduce costs, reduce time, be able to enhance the project where possible, and just think outside the box. And so one example of a Transportation X project is the Safer Seward Highway, which is a Seward Highway from milepost 98.5 to 118. This is a project that's in our STIP right now for $215 million, and it is a larger project than that. We're looking for other funding as we move forward. But with this project as the TRX program, we have a team that's co-located, and it's an agile project management methodology, and they're looking at nationally what are other states doing to help enhance their project delivery. The USDOT did release and announced this last week their Center of Excellence for Project Delivery, so this is something that's happening nationally, so we're trying to develop additional ways to manage and deliver our program here in state. Something we're excited about, and we'll probably be talking more about this as we go.
For the record, Commissioner Anderson, another big investment area for us is in our bridges. There's about $1 billion worth of bridge work in the 2024 to 2027 STIP. You'll see Alaska Highway Bridges is a big focus for us. The Johnson and Gristle, those are the two 1944 bridges that were built for the Alaska Highway World War II. And so $170 million worth of investment right now is the estimated cost there. The Juneau Creek Bridge is the one associated with the Cooper Landing Bypass. That's the one down on the Kenai Peninsula that is basically going around Cooper Landing. Now that project is in construction. And so that's one of the when it's completed, it'll be the highest crossing in the state. And it's also going to be the longest single span state. So it's a big bridge. We were out there a week ago with Senator Sullivan. That project is in the works. I mean, it's full construction out there. And so we're working on, over the sequencing of that project to get that one done over the next 5 years is most likely what it's going to take. And then other bridge replacements out there is the Steeves Highway, Gold Creek, Catalina, some stuff out in Katna, some bridges down in Ketchikan, and many more. And so there's a lot of bridge work going on. We recognize that bridges is one area where we're going to keep focused on in the state to make sure that we're in good shape, and we're going to be. I think we are right now, and this investment puts us in a really good spot. Another project that is an administration priority is the West Sitna Access Road. You can see that in the state. What's being proposed is approximately 18 miles of new frontier road. It's what we're proposing, and this is important, is a public road, and that's kind of the differentiation between what has been proposed by the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, ADA. So we're taking a look at this as access to the west of the Susitna River, and with public access going across there. And it's really recreation, agricultural, forestry, there's mining, a full suite of purposes there, and a lot of state land. I think one of the estimates I saw was 6 million acres of state land that you access once you get across the Susitna River. So you'll see that in the draft step from 2024 to 2027 for $82.5 million. Okay, and with that, we'll move into the Alaska Marine Highway System highlights, and I'm going to ask Director Fonga to come up and provide a brief on that.
We're Director Greg Fonga, Marine Director of Alaska Marine Highway System. This first slide here is demonstrates what the DOT has been doing for federal funds what they've been pursuing. The first five you see on the list are all in the program. And then the last one there is a new one for Chasen, the multimodal grant, and that's part of the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act. The table you see there gives you by year and demonstrates federal fund involvement for Marine Highways. The next slide is for our new vessel construction. The Tuscumina replacement is well underway as far as the development of the plan. We hope to have that out to a yard here by the end of the year. 2024 in SIP, there's $70 million. That's for continuing the design and the doing the locking work with the chosen yard as we get started on the construction phase. And $70 million, it is, break that down, it's $56 million from the FTA and using full credits for the matching funds there, $14 million. And then in 2025, that's $280 million in the STIP. And again, this is from FDA, and then also we're pursuing what I just mentioned, the multimodal project discretionary grant as well. So hopeful to be successful in chasing funds on that too. The next one's the main line of replacement in 2024 and STIP. There's $26.8 million. That's to start the design work of that. This is for the replacement for six-year-old Matanuska in Columbia. And the last item there is the hybrid, the no emissions ferry, 2025, $45 million in there for that. And this is under FTA again for this program. And this is the one that's going at the college. On the next slide, this is the upgrades to the existing fleet. It's in the STIP. Badgelina is the addition of the cruise quarters, just as we did on the Hubbard. And in 2024, that work's planned to be done. And that is FDA funds again, $20 million, and then the full credit match of $5 million. In Columbia, we've got to upgrade the controllable pitch propellers. It's an old system, no longer supported, breaks down, you can't get the parts. So that's upgrade that to keep it running until it's replaced. And then the Kennecott, as the EPA required emissions upgrades for the gen sets. That work has to be completed regulatory standpoint by 2026. So planned in there in 2024, could slide in 2025. And the last item there is Matt Luska. This one has quite a work list, safety requirements, alternate SOLAS safety, at sea. We do meet again with the Coast Guard here the 14th of September to go over all the requirements that are in there to really get a path forward, what has to be done, or there's some things that can put off. And we have a lot of steel inflation at hole too, and that's not all quantified. So that's a project that's we'll be making decisions on because it does have a potential 60-year-old vessel. And the last item mentioned here, just wanted to point out, under the modernizing tools, we have installed Starlink now on about half the fleet, and that's been a real success. And then we're putting on a vessel management system on vessels to give the crews the tools to manage their vessels, and moving them out of their stacks of 17 manuals they have on that, be able to do everything online, and also have computerized maintenance management system where we will manage our preventive maintenance in that system as described by our OEM guidelines for each one of the components on the vessel. And the next slide here is work that's got to be done on from a maintenance standpoint. Terminal refurbishment, what falls under there is also leases of terminals such as Prince Rupert or Kodiak terminals we don't own, and any kind of refurbishment has to be done at facilities. It's $2 million annually, and these funds are in to be a breakdown of that. In the terminal refurbishment, this is through the surface transportation grant. Of that $2 million, $1.6 million is from that fund, and then the state match is $400,000. Fleet condition surveys. Each year we go through the fleet, go through condition, and then we use that for our shipyard specifications. This year it's $400,000 annually, again, supported through the Surface Transportation Block Grant. $320,000 in grant, state matches. And then shipyard repairs is for the state-owned shipyard. Any work that we have to do is the owner of that. That's $500,000 annually. This is also supported with the Surface Transportation Grant, $400,000 annually. That grant, $100,000 at state. The last item is the vessel overhauls, $22 million annually. This is to keep everything operational and for our certificates from the U.S. Coast Guard and also from our classification society, DPS. This includes overhauls on any of the components, main engines, gen sets, boilers, anything they have to do on there, and any skill repairs. And the $22 million is all state-funded. Next slide is on our docks, and five dock terminals on here for upgrades. All of them include upgrades for the Alaska class ferries under Catalina. Some other improvements that have been done at the same time, but the Cordova terminal upgrade of that project there, 6.5. This is MARAD funding. 5.2 million, the state match is 1.3. And then the Titlick, also upgrade there for the Alaska class ferry doing the stern load operations there. Have had huge dollars. This is also MARAD funded. Of that 11 million, 8.8 is MARAD, 2.2 is the state match. Same for Chinika. And Chinika is also MARAD funded at 13.7, 10.4. MARAD state match is 2.6. And then we move down to southeast, both Pelican and Agua need upgrades as well. And they're both funded through the FTA. the 13.8 for Pelican. This will be a new terminal built right next to the old, and they'll have a new bridge section about 100 foot long for vehicles and passengers. And then all the Dolphin work for that. That's 13.8 million. 10.4 FDA state that's 2.6 and ag group in the same type of setup. Well, put in extra Dolphins that go out plastic 3.7 million from FDA and the state match of 10,000. And I do want to point out that we're, from a planning standpoint, you know, we're working on our long-term plan. All these terminals will be designed as a standard going forward to make sure not have to, you know, they'll get the same loading and discharge operation in place, same for the vessel setup, same. So we have standard and they can interchange as much as they can. And the last item on there is facility surveys. The DOT uses this to just inspect, look, grid section, insert the Dolphins, anything else needs to be looked at. 240,000 annually. That breakdown is 192,000 from the surface transportation block grant and 48,000 annually from the state. And that includes what's in the STIP for last year.
Hey, for the record, Commissioner Anderson, thank you, Director Gronga. So that's a quick summary of the Alaska Marine Highway System program in the STIP. Next up, we're a wrap up. And so we're going to run through kind of some final points here for all of you, and then we'll go from there. So with me is our legislative liaison, Mr. Andy.
Thank you, Commissioner. So I'm a bit of a closer on this one to wrap you up, and we're going to step through some elements in this presentation that help to frame beyond some of the things we've touched on. And so as my pastor is fond of saying towards the end of the sermon, this is the clubhouse turn. I'm going to get into the final stretch, give you a little idea of some things we also want you to walk away from on this presentation. So when we're talking about the STIP, we do want you to keep in mind beyond infrastructure, beyond access, there are workforce considerations, you know, good paying jobs. Every one of you in your districts have constituents that run the spectrum of the trades that will be working on projects in this STIP. So we really, again, look at this as a workforce plan beyond just an infrastructure plan. In the top right corner of this slide, we do, again, look at regionally. So there's regionally as far as the state, and then within DOT, of course, we have our three regions. And we're tracking, you know, what each of those regions is doing on a year-by-year basis and framing how are we moving on projects from a DOT region standpoint as well. And that's one way to sort of track through what's happening with the STIP. In the middle portion here, we did call out the STIP ID. It's actually closer to 6 million years, so that's a four-year number that's actually closer to 20, about 4 instead of 20 on the slide, just to call that out. Because the important question you would want to ask when we're talking about workforce is, what about Alaskans? Or is this going to be jobs for Alaskans, right? Anticipating that question, this training workforce and development funding in the STIP is used specifically to make sure that we are doing on-the-job training, that we are working on training our workforce, making sure Alaskans are getting those jobs within all the projects that we have listed in the STIP. I do want to take a moment and ask if the commissioner would share that huge example in reference to training.
Yeah, for the record, Commissioner Anderson. Yep. So one thing that we've been learning in rural Alaska is when it comes to workforce development, folks are wanting workforce development where they're at. So in the past, a lot of times, you know, people are going to Anchorage, they're going to Fairbanks to get training. But what we're hearing more and more of is, hey, we want the training here. And so we were presented with an opportunity last fall. We're up in Hughes, which is along the Koyukuk River. They had a project. It was a very simple project, a road to their cemetery. About a 3-mile access road. They had gotten all the permitting themselves, all the plans, everything was completed. It was shovel ready. So they asked for help. What could DOT to help us? We also have people here that want to work. So we were able to help them find some money, and so fund, a very simple cemetery road. We used some of the federal funds for the training pieces of it. And we worked with the city government, and they put together a plan. And they hired folks from their communities, surrounding communities, and began a work program. And so this building the road was actually a workforce development project. So they have a set, we were out there a few weeks ago, they have a set of like 12 different pieces of equipment. They've run through 45 people out there through a training program. They have the people that are training, did bring a few resources up from the lower 48 to teach them about graders and mechanicing, those kind of things. But they also found people in the surrounding communities that could also were had resumes and could train. And so they're out there right now building this road, a 3-mile road, about a mile and a half into it. And it's all a workforce development project. They switch between equipment every day. You know, they really had it structured out, but they did it themselves. And from a DOT perspective, we don't have a lot of resources to do this on a broad scale that Alaska probably needs. But if we have communities that are willing to step up, and we can start using these workforce development funds to do more of this, where it's real time training. There's a lot of pride out there. There's a lot of feeling like, oh man, this is a really good thing, and we're providing this benefit to our community. So more of that, I think, is what we're going to look at and trying to use that as a model for the future.
And again, for the record, Andy Mills. So to finish this slide out, I did want to point out the lower charts are from what's called AASHTOware. So AASHTO is the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials, the association group that we work with the most on visibility and issues with other state DOTs. There's a lot of exciting insights there, but so AASHTOware is of the enterprise software that they work with DOTs to take project information from an engineer estimate all the way through to payroll for the contracting community. And this AASHTOware has a lot of capabilities that allows us insights into the workforce for those different projects. So just wanted to note that, because when you talk about the infrastructure legislation, there is a constant conversation about what is the right level of projects to be out on the street to not sort of superheat, make sure the workforce is, you're telegraphing the work that's coming out. And that's from the STIP, it gives you that early, to the tentative advertising list, which is later on. You're wanting to telegraph what the needs are to that community so that that workforce is ready for the projects when they hit the street. Stepping on to the next slide, so this one, definitely wanted to touch on this. We've said, to slide 34 there, we've talked about discretionary grants, but we wanted to call out a little bit more on this conversation. And I put on the top of the slide, when we're talking about discretionary grants, just for folks in the public, those are not formula funds that we are expecting. They are competitive grants we need to go out and we need to compete to get. So I put in here, we want to be creative and we want to be aggressive. So how do we go after discretionary grants? First of all, we did want to highlight some recent awards that most of these folks at this committee are probably aware of, right? The Marine Highway Grant, there was that announcement for the $285 million. We did have to compete for that, although our eligibility was fairly well established with the eligibility of that program. The $35 million that was recently announced on this culvert for fish passage along the parks, that's a really great example of a collaborative effort between Fish and Game, DOT, and that was a competitive grant we had to compete for, and fortunately we are going to see some funds coming to the state for anadromous stream crossings. It's a fairly significant effort, which we're again excited about that partnership. It's smaller, but I did want to note, because I'm a drone fan, like a lot of folks in this committee I know, this $2 million Arrow, which I think is Alaska Rural Remote Operations Work Arrow, always working on those good acronyms. And that's sort of the early deployment of drone technology out in rural Alaska that's going to provide insights into sort of real-time conditions and get beyond visual line of sight capabilities out into Alaska. So it's a very exciting, even though it's a modest discretionary grant, it opens doors for sure, and we're very excited about that. So some of the ones that we've been awarded, and then, of course, we are continuing to go after discretionary grants. Some of the charts on here, although they are a little hard to read, so apologies for that, worth trying to get at showing this group how we're looking at our success rate, what we're looking at for potential competitiveness on our grants. So if I step you through, first, the numbers under the creative and aggressive portion. Again, Alaska so far has been awarded of the $1.9 billion available, like 50, that's a substantial number, 52. Sorry. That is a significant number. Awarded nationwide, $52 billion. Sorry, and Alaska's won $2 billion of that. I inverted the numbers on that. Sorry. We were awarded, again, from different agencies. Again, I'm going to read through it because it's hard to read. But if you look on the blue lines chart, you can see that the Department of Transportation, USDOT, has awarded a little over $650 million worth of work. And as you get down to the bottom of that chart, you can see the Department of Energy at a very low number, which I don't have at hand. But just to show you where are we finding success in some of these. And if you're looking at the right-hand side of this chart, you're seeing the red bars and the green bars. The red bars show you the success rate by the type of grant itself. And apologies for some of the acronyms on that one. RCP would be Reconnecting Communities. RAISE, I think some folks are certainly familiar with. SMART grant, the SS for a Smart Streets for All. In the lower portion are some of the grants that have been submitted, but we don't have word back on yet. And specifically on the MPDG, again, apologies for that acronym, that's Multimodal Project Discretionary Grants. Mega, Infra, and Rural are some significant, some very large grants that are offered as part of the bipartisan infrastructure law. And last night was the closing date for some of those grants that were submitted, and you can see next to those the dollar amounts of what has been applied for. So we'll certainly look for maybe a larger presentation on discretionary grants as we get into session, tell you, you know, what we have pending and what we've been awarded so that you can get a better idea of the money we're going after. And you can tell us whether we're being creative and aggressive. In the STIP, we did want to highlight what may not be obvious for you, which is there are direct recipients that are not, that are in the STIP that are not DOT. So that would be local sponsors, municipalities, local stakeholders. And those are represented in the STIP as a requirement of the bipartisan infrastructure law, but not necessarily something that DOT is the award recipient for that grant. We also have the congressionally delegated spending, I think it's designated, which is, we'll change that on the slide. But I think the previous term used to be earmarked. Those come our way, and we have to put them in the STIP, again, to make sure that they're represented and make sure that, as part of the plan, everyone can see all the surface transportation projects that are in the STIP. And then, of course, tribal transportation projects. We did want to call that out on this slide. There's a substantial amount of money flowing to the state of Alaska that, through our tribal organizations, and DOT is working to make sure that we have visibility on those, so that we can put them in the STIP and that they're represented there. On the lower portion of the slide, you'll actually see the magnitude of that. For total transportation-related awards in Alaska, $654 million. You can see DOT is only $288 of that. So there's actually a larger amount of money out on the street for, I think that's federal fiscal year 23. And so that's a lot of money out there for coordination purposes that we want to be both aware of and coordinating with these entities. Something we want to make sure we, step into the next slide, make sure we reinforce to folks, coordination and transparency, that's what the STIP is all about, making sure we're all on the same page, literally, and that we're communicating with one another. I highlighted the infrastructure coordinator position. I'm hoping all of you have had a chance to talk with Shireen Crosby. If you haven't, certainly, I expect you'll get an opportunity to. Our interactions with her have been fantastic. She has a lot of great ideas for the infrastructure office that she is working through in the governor's office, and certainly a primary point of contact for coordination. And I know she's definitely had some good conversations with the commissioner about project bundling that we're quite excited about. But of course, federal partners, the congressional delegation, businesses in the state, the public, of course, that's what the public comment is all about. We're here in front of the legislature, as far as the Transportation Committee, making sure we're communicating on the SIP, working with our local municipal planning organizations and those tribal partners, unions. This list could really go on, but I want to be sure that folks understood we are reaching out, trying to coordinate on the SIP items, and if their option to provide comments on any or all items in the SIP. On the discretionary grant front, the lower portion there, you hopefully are all familiar with the Alaska Transportation Funding Opportunity Hub. That's a collaborative effort between the Alaska AML and the Department of DOT. Again, how can you coordinate if you don't have some sort of central ability to see what's available as far as discretionary grants and coordinate on those? And a big shout out, of course, to AML, who's been a fantastic partner on Burning the Midnight Oil as well, for the Infra, Mega, and World Grant, as well as others. On the right-hand side of the slide is a bit of a sneak peek. Speaking of data modernization, we are always looking at ways to innovate where it may increase the public's ability to interact with information, in this case, the SIP. So what you'll see on the right-hand side is a very early work in progress on a chatbot using ChatGPT or AI, using PDFs of the projects from the SIP as a reference library. So you can go in and you can ask questions like, anything that you would want to know that's within the SIP, and it would hopefully, and more or less, we're going to keep it in beta until we try to break it a little bit, hopefully answer that question with that library and provide a good answer. And this is, again, instead of wading through these PDFs and having a lot of fairly technical terms, we're hoping to provide tools that really increase the transparency to folks who don't have a planning background, don't know some of the terminology in this, and have a greater tool to interact with the SIP because of how consequential that document is. Lastly, again, policymakers and the public alike, what are we doing? We are driving towards consensus, hopefully. That's the goal, right? And I think hopefully in the innovation, we're showing that we're not satisfied with status quo. We're all things earlier showed that we're driving towards improvement, and we're not being told to zoom. We're driving internally ourselves, process improvement, and that we are always doing striving for continuous improvement. So we have said modern, resilient, and agile as our guiding light on this. And of course, we're talking about more modern, meaning we want to continue to innovate for the public. We want more resilient, which is a lasting change, not a flash in the pan that goes away in a few years. We want to be more agile because the environment is always changing. On projects in the SIP, things are changing. Community needs are changing. So we need to be agile to meet the needs that people are calling us to do with this SIP and all the projects in it. I put some critical questions on the bottom. Those are basically, what can we do better? What would you like to see improved upon? What do you like? We always like to hear what you actually like rather than just what you don't like. But we'll take anything you have as far as comments on the SIP and, of course, anything else. That wraps up my portion of it. I'll hand it back to the commissioner and maybe the deputy commissioner as well.
Yeah, Commissioner Anderson, for the record, I'll just wrap it up real quick. I just want to give a big thanks to our capital project teams throughout the state. I mean, these are state employees, these are contractors, these are our federal funding partners. I mean, and the stakeholders. I mean, these are folks that really, you know, they're making it happen for us, delivering this program every year. And this year in particular, right now there's this opportunity for all states where if some states aren't spending their program funds, they're redistributed for states that are ready to spend it. And this year in Alaska, we've done enough work, and we've been thinking about this, because last year we did fairly well with this August redistribution, that, you know, we've requested over $100 million, which is extra money in addition to the funds you see in the SIP. And so we're ready for those funds. You know, we're going to do good work and good projects right away, but there's a lot of work that's going on to make those things possible. So I really appreciate that. But with that, I think that wraps up our presentation. Chair McCabe.
Thanks, Commissioner. So I appreciate you and your team for coming and bringing the SIP to us, and really interested in seeing how it works, the new SIP and the new communications procedures and everything. With that said, I know there are a bunch of questions. I'm getting emails and texts from folks online, and I know there's some questions here in the room. So I think start out here in the room if there's any questions from any committee members. I think Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question, and thank you so much. This was very helpful, and I really appreciate the online tutorial, as I have tried to stumble through it a few times myself and haven't necessarily found the information I was looking for. I do have a question, because I know that I believe many of my committee members have read the FAST comments and the AMAP comments, and I guess I'm giving you some opportunity to maybe provide some insight. I also am curious, as I know Deputy Commissioner Keith mentioned that there was 400 projects initially, and those were culled. I'm curious about what was the selection process, who was involved in that selection, is that criteria public, so that the folks know in the room and obviously online and in the state how this project, how this SIF was developed.
Senator Tobin, through the chair, Senator Tobin. Commissioner Anderson, for the record, I'll let Deputy Commissioner Keith speak more to the AMAP and the FAST planning because she's had direct conversations with folks. But, you know, these all are our partners. I was on the FAST planning board, you know, for years, and I value that experience. These are things we want to work with people. Coordinating on things with the SIF and whatnot is always can be a challenging, but we're here to do it right. And I think what you're seeing right now is open transparency and, hey, this is, you know, we're gonna do this thing, and if there are concerns, we're going to get them addressed. So with that, I'll let you just.
Yeah, thank you. So for the record, Catherine Keith, regarding the FAST and AMAP comments, yes, we have our SIF team. We have a rather large team that's been supporting this process. So they've sat down and we've all talked with representatives of FAST and AMAP to address their comments, and their comments were excellent. It was just, we had a 2 or 3 hour meeting just going through them kind of line item by line item. And that's just been, you know, one step along the way. You know, our regional planners have been working with our MPOs on a daily basis. So there are some things through the draft SIP public comment process that have come up. For example, a couple projects that are in our statewide transportation improvement program aren't in their transportation improvement program, which it does need to be. So there's a mismatch of timing and sequencing that we're working to correct if that's what the MPOs are supporting. So we're having those conversations and they're ongoing. We'll work with them. One thing that you'll likely see is that we will extend our current SIF a number of months to allow us to work through some of the process challenges with rolling out a new SIF. And, you know, that's something that we'll work with the MPOs to support, and that'll be something that they're eager to have happen as well, so they don't see any SIFs in their projects. The second comment to address is just the number of projects from 400 to 200. These projects didn't go away. A lot of the projects that were happening in the previous SIF, they just have already had their funds allocated, so they don't need to be in the current SIF if their funds were allocated for construction fully in the previous SIF. So that's one thing that happened, is that projects just drop off through the natural discompletion of projects. And then the other instances are where there's programs that are combined. So when we take something like our Highway Safety Improvement Program, which has four individual projects originally in the SIP, four different SIP IDs, now there's one. So we can track one with one number how those funds are being spent. And we can look at that internally. It'll just help us have a lot greater visibility in how we're moving the needle with those programs. So they didn't go away just in the SIP. There's one neat ID, but you'll see lots of detail in the capital budget. Happy to elaborate further.
Thank you. So Senator Keel, I believe, had a question, and I have a couple online. I'll go to next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for a great presentation, thorough and engaging. I didn't even need the coffee to stay with me. I guess a question about it ties into some of the comments you made in response to Senator Tobin, but also I was a little surprised at the top of the presentation when you said in the past we've been over-programmed with too many things in the SIF. And my perception has long been that that lets us have shovel-ready projects. When other states can't use their money, we get some of it. And so as I hear that we're reducing the number of projects we're programming, and that as some projects fall off, we're not replacing them with new. How are we doing with our project pipeline? Are we keeping up? Are we going to be in position to get additional dollars and spend all that we have?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Keel, excellent question. In fact, the big pipeline of projects that we had was one of the reasons why we wanted to have full transparency in the out years from years 2028 to 2030. And that allows us to take the list of projects that we had. Right now it's $12 billion of projects between where we're at now and 2030. So we have confidence that that pipeline is there, but what we're actually short on is the revenue side to be able to fully complete these projects. So what will happen as we're able to either find other revenue or innovative financing strategies, then through amendments we can move projects in the out years into the fiscally constrained SIP, but otherwise we can still move projects from one year to another within these 4 years. So our project pipeline is secure. We still have allowed an additional 20% on top of the revenue that we have. We have approximately $5.2 billion in revenue through the different streams that we've identified. You know, we have budgeted $6.3 billion in work, so we still have an extra, we can call it a stretch goal, that we're going to look for funding and other sources in order to hit these project needs. As we know, there's outstanding needs beyond what we've even identified in our SIP, so we'll keep working aggressively on our end to make sure that we have shovel-ready projects.
Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if you put me at the back of the queue once you're through other members.
Sure, that'd be great. So I think I know Senator Kaufman has some questions as well as myself, but there's a couple of folks on teams. So let's start out with Senator Myers, your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner Keith, throughout the presentation, there have been a few references to economic impact, economic vitality, things like this. And I mean, while I agree with that in principle, some of the conversations I've had with the department over the last few months lead me to believe that the department really doesn't have a whole lot of ways of actually measuring the economic impact to be expected from a particular project. I mean, unless there's, you know, some natural resource project that's already in the pipeline in that area, then I'd like some more clarification of how you come up with economic impact for specific projects.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Myers. Yeah, the economic vitality as an investment area are really, when we look at a project and is it primarily, you know, we have safety projects, we have safety repair projects, resiliency, economic vitality are projects that we believe, you know, foster economic vitality in the state. So we don't have necessarily a number or a quantifiable way to say that. But what we do say is, you know, when we look at something like wayside, there's a certain type of wayside that, you know, fosters access to the outdoors. We believe that that fosters economic vitality because it attracts people to the state. So it's more of a holistic way we're looking at it right now versus the numbers way, but we are going to work towards that because I think that is an important, right now knowing about, you know, the decline of population in Alaska and the challenges we have here, we feel like that's something that we have to start communicating, that how can DOT help? And so it's definitely a work in progress. But we're committed to getting some more of what you're saying, Senator Myers. That'll take us a little more time.
Thank you, Commissioner. So Representative Vance, next on Teams.
Thank you for the presentation. I have a couple of questions. First of all, thank you for being available to come to our district and take a look at roads and specific projects. I know that you've been making your way around the state and being accessible, and that really means a lot to my local leadership, and really shows you kind of, I think it connects the dots on all the emails that you get from us that you know what we're talking about. But I just wanted to clarify for the culvert replacement, are all of those being fish-friendly culverts, and how is that being funded?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Vance. Yeah, so the recent discretionary grant that Mr. Mills just spoke to, that was based on fish passage. So all of those pipes are constructed with those fish passage in mind. That is a standard for us for DOT. If, you know, we go through a process for every culvert anymore, that we look at the stream, we identify if it requires fish passage, and then if it does, then move forward with that type of structure. So it's a pretty standard. We have a manual on how we move forward with that.
Wonderful. And I have a second question. And recently in the news, we've seen that the Cooper Landing Bypass project is going to cost double what it was originally anticipated. And I just would like to know the original thought process behind the need for the bypass and why you see a double price tag versus, you know, say 25%. We know that the cost of commodities is much higher, but, you know, that's a pretty staggering number for that project. And I myself enjoy driving through Cooper Landing. I don't mind going 35. So it just seems like an awful lot of money for something that I haven't really heard the justification for such a large project.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Vance. So the Cooper Landing Bypass Project, we have it was the longest EIS in the nation. And what I had heard was 1976 was when that started. So this is definitely before, you know, a lot of us up here's time. But as we move forward, you know, one of our strategies is there's a value to the project because the bypass, it is a safety, you know, focus, so we can eliminate a lot of conflicts through there. The increase in cost, there's several factors. Inflation is definitely one factor. As we get into that project, you know, we really had the team start looking at the different components that have driven up costs. So there's things like wildlife crossings that have driven up the cost. There are things, you know, that agencies have asked us to do that is fairly, you know, because we are going through U.S. Forest Service land, that's driven up the costs on it. We're looking at all those things and how we can bring down the cost, recognizing that it's not a question that if we're going to do it, because, you know, there's a road, there's the scars there, you know, they're working on the bridge plan. It's just how long it's going to take. And as you see with the STIF, we have to fiscally constrain every year. And so we just may not have the money in the next 4 years to do the whole thing. We may have to stretch it out. And so that's how we're looking at it right now. But hopefully as the team, you know, we're full steam on, hey, look at innovations, look at ways that maybe, you know, maybe one thought is we can get the highway in and some of these other additional features can be later. So at least the public can get that use in the short term. And so those are the kind of things we're looking at. You're going to hear more about that project as we go, because we recognize we would classify that as a major project in this state. And so, you know, we want to make sure we're taking care of those. So we're putting energy.
Thank you, Commissioner. That history is that project was started before I was born. So I think that paints a bigger picture of what's going on. But I look forward to more updates.
Thanks, Commissioner. So Representative Stutes is on online on the telephone, and I can go to. Her, she has a question.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And I'm sorry I was a little bit late, so my question might appear to be redundant. But I thought I caught at the end of your comments or your presentation when I first got on the match for the federal dollars for the mainliner vessels. And did I hear that match is going to be consist of federal dollars?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, yeah, so the strategy right now for the vessels, for as much as we can, the match, you know, we're going through with that toll credits concept where we can get credit for the investments you know, that we make state dollar investments in the system that return to us as toll credits. So that's when we say a federal dollar investment, that's really what we're saying there.
Well, I guess that alarms me slightly, having just had the opportunity to meet with Lisa Murkowski as well as Buttigieg, and both of them spoke of that specifically and indicated that was not going to work. It just, you couldn't use federal dollars of any kind to match receiving federal dollars. So it alarms me. They also made it very clear that as the state matches whatever they need, that the opportunity for us to receive more federal dollars increases exponentially. So I just hate to see that configured into the funding of the new mainliners when it doesn't sound as though it's going to fly at all.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Suits. No, thank you for those comments. We'll run that down. I wasn't aware of the conversations with Senator Murkowski and the secretary on that topic. But what we have, you know, discussed at length on the toll credits, and we can discuss more in the next legislative session of the toll credits. That'll be a big topic, I think, for all of us. So, yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner.
I certainly appreciate that.
If you could keep the Transportation Committee involved in that too, I was unaware of those conversations as well. So I appreciate being kept in the loop with that, if you would. With that, Senator Kaufman has a few questions, I believe, in the night.
Thank you. I'll direct this to the commissioner, and then if you want to refer to others. Your improvement project that we're seeing around the STIP, is it, as an improvement project, is it being funded pretty much organically within your normal operations, or is it are improvements a certain line item, or how are you managing the project as an improvement project, and how is it funded?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Kaufman, and for the record, Commissioner Anderson. DOT, the way I've always been brought up, right, 23 years in the DOT, was on-the-job training is kind of our thing. So a lot of what you see when we're working through these programs, we're doing it in real time. So when we talk about, like, the PRX program, Safer Seward Highway, that's real time as part of that project. And then, of course, you know, we'll have staff in the background helping facilitate and coordinate. Some of these initiatives, you know, will make the most of federal funding programs like workforce development. There are money specific to that we can utilize. But when it comes to overall improvement, I think we're taking that more as integrated, applied, and working that route. But I'll let Deputy Commissioner Keith speak on that as well, because she's been leading up a lot of those initiatives.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Senator Kaufman. So for the record, Catherine Keith, one of the interesting things about these tools that we've identified is that they're actually far cheaper than sometimes prepackaged proprietary software that oftentimes we find our state departments using. So we do have another program that's currently in development for managing the STIP as it moves forward. It's called the STIP Manager, and that's in development still. But programs like that are costly, and when you do want to make changes to them, there's expenses that are go along with that. So some of the tools that we have that are more enterprise and open source allow us to not only have tools that we can share within our department, but we can share with others as well, such as some of the initiatives that the infrastructure coordinator, Shereen Crosby, has been working on. So happy to provide some detail on the tools and the costs for the software, but it'd be laughable just how low budget the program is.
Thank you. I think that's admirable. There's often a notion that we need to fund this improvement project like it's major infrastructure itself. And so to do it organically, working what you have, I just want to tip my hat to you on that, to the extent that you can do it. The second area that I have is, as representative senators, some of the biggest questions we get from our constituents regarding DOT is what the heck are they doing? Why are they doing it? Why didn't I know about it? And so the theme of today's conversation, which is around transparency, is very timely. It's a long time coming, but it's good that we're having it. The big picture of that that I have is kind of the front-end engagement. So where in my project background, we would have concept development. You would be coordinating with the stakeholders that are appropriate at that concept development time. And then as you're progressing the project, you're using like a weighted scoring system that you're judging this. And this, I'll tip my hat to Senator Myers. He was touching on this, but I want to go a couple levels higher. So of the scoring method that is being used to judge projects in the hopper, so to the extent that it can be not subjective, but more objective criteria, it has, we would look at risk, we would look at the economic value of the project, we would look at the technological maturity of solutions, and this whole slate of things, and then that would give the project a go, no-go score, but also may elevate it. You know, there's a certain high level of risk that it was addressing, the project would get elevated because of that metric. So how far along are you onto a system that would be more objective like that and maybe not so pushed around due to, temporary concerns, transient influences, those sorts of things?
Thank you, Senator Kaufman. For the record, Catherine Keith, one of the, it's almost giving a sneak peek of where we're going next with this, because now that we have this database established for the statewide transportation improvement program, so that has about 486 data points, as I mentioned, for that, and that was on the planning phase. But now that that's created, the very next step for that is on the performance side, so looking at the project management, like earned value management metrics that we need to be able to see the progress of projects. That can also be provided at the same dashboard system that we have created on the planning side. And that'll be helpful not just for project management, but then looking at the outcomes. You know, how are we measuring the outcomes, such as with economic vitality? You know, what are the metrics that we're tracking these projects again? And then are they moving the needle? Are we being successful so that we can start having that feedback loop? So that when we are planning projects, if we have we're planning projects that aren't actually making a difference where we want them to be, then we know we can readjust and evaluate it from there. One of the things you'll see from the department is Project Management Office, Center of Excellence internally that we'll be launching statewide in the upcoming year. So will help formalize some of these processes and offer greater training throughout our staff. So we're excited about that. I hope that answers your question. As we go through that process, there'll be kind of live updates to similar dashboards and portals that'll be available publicly.
Thank you. Just the one follow-up on that with respect to the agile concept. And so we've got a couple of underpass, overpass projects going on in our neighborhood. I say that with reference to Rep. Kalum. So we're getting hit with community interest around, is it really the right size, right design for where we're at right now? So I just hope the agile process will allow you to maybe go back and look at it. I share my concerns on that. But one last question I had is really around the Marine Highway System. We go back to slide 17, you see billions and billions and billions being spent. And I just want to hear a summary of, as we're spending that money, as we're doing those things, we're replacing this prop, we're doing this, we're doing that, what's the status of our strategic vision that we're operating to? So that money is being spent on a higher, better objective than just kicking the rusty can down the road. I'm sorry, the rusty reference stings. What are we doing strategically to be sure that everything that we're doing right now is aligned where we need to be at a higher level of operations in terms of cost and performance?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Kaufman, maybe I'll ask our Director Dorndev to come up to address this question as well. But, you know, the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board is working through short-term and long-term plans. And really, you know, that's where we want this guiding light, you know, to come from on the long-term and some of the short-term objectives. But right now, we're having to do things because that will keep the ships running and with the system operating. And with this overall goal, I think you heard it, you know, modernizing is huge. The things that are going with Starlink, those are game changers for us. And just from that overall management position. And then the reliability piece, you know, we just keep working on reliability. But with that, if I could, I'll hand it over to Director Karn.
For the record, Frank Karn, good question. If we find ourselves with the fleet in this condition, its age, and so we do spend a lot of money just to keep all the vessels running. And unfortunately, when you want to upgrade the fleet, high grade it, replace, there's a time frame to that. And so we have to continue to spend the money on these old vessels to operate until they're in place. So there is that time frame component. We are working on that long range plan. We have a fleet replacement plan that we put together and team to get around. And as we're working on our long range plan, that's all incorporated in there. What the goal is to get to. But we need to get newer vessels so we're not spending this money just to keep these old ones going. Always replacing steel, parts that are hard to get, fabricating things. So that there is all part of the plan until we can get out of this cycle that we've been out old book pretty much.
And just follow up, the time frame for that long-range plan, that strategic vision being complete and something that we can hold in our hands and refer to?
Yeah. So we've just been focused on getting a three-year budget in that we can turn in here. And that's kind of phase one of the long-range plan. And then phase two and three, it's tied to the DOT timeframe. It's supposed to be a part of the rollover, the greater DOT plan. So that's, I think, about August of 2024 to be turned in. And we'll have our plan pretty well laid out here this fall. And then depending on what's in the DOT plan, whether they're building roads or bridges, then we'll adjust from that. But we'll have it pretty well laid out and ready to turn.
Thank you.
So thanks, Commissioner and Director. I know there's a couple more questions. Director, you might want to stay up here. I know Representative Mina has a question and Senator Myers has some more questions. But as long as you're here at the table, I have several questions on the Marine Highway System. So my first question is, the MHOB has a meeting. They had a meeting a couple weeks ago. They have another meeting like in 2 days. And I'm also aware of a letter that was written to the MHOB about, it was published in the Ketchikan Daily News and other places. There were some issues with a couple of employees that had some problems with the way the Marine Highway System was being run, and they wrote a letter to the MHOB. I know that you've done some investigating, both of you, and I know that there's some stuff that we can't talk about here, but to the extent, and maybe this is probably the wrong venue, but it's the only public venue we have this summer, so to the extent that you can talk about the non-personnel issues, sort of interested to know what you found with your investigation and how we're going to fix those issues, if you care to elaborate, however much you care to elaborate on that, would be great.
Yeah, through the chair, Chair McCabe. No, I appreciate that question. There were two different letters that were submitted. I believe they were also sent to legislators. But it really was concerns not only with, you know, some of the management of the system, you know, and some of it was concerns with the commissioner. I'll vouch for that. Some of the concerns were related to a worry, I believe, that somehow we were outsourcing the Marine Highway System. And I do want to address those because that's just not true. We're very, you know, and I'll let Director Korn to speak to the realities of the staffing of the Marine Highway System. But, you know, we're working hard trying to recruit and retain, and it's just tough right now. And this is a national problem. So when we're bringing on some of the concerns were with specific contractors, there was some misinformation that, you know, maybe we sole sourced some contracts we didn't. I'll say that on the record. But there were these so a fair amount of concerns. I wish that the employees would go through the regular lines that you would normally go through an employer with these concerns, but I think we could have had them addressed and we could have moved forward versus, you know, I think one of them was called a whistleblower letter. And then they wanted just a general concerns letter from a former employee. But reality, you know, I think the important thing is, you know, we value all of our employees. We also value our contractors, and we need everybody right now because I think, as you saw in this whole stiff presentation, there's a lot of work out there for Alaskans and for Alaska. And so how we can get people and get them working on the work and making sure that, you know, we have the resources that we need, that's where we're focused right now. And so, yeah, there are some personnel things too, some accusations and some things. And I got to be respectful of both the people making the accusations and the people that were accused. And so we can't, you know, I'm not be able to speak to those types of things. But the misinformation about contracts and things like that, I want to make sure on the record that, hey, we're working hard out there. We've got a team's working really hard, lots of hours to try to keep this thing going. So with that, maybe Mr. Carter.
Yeah, I guess all I can say to that is, you know, there are changes that come with new management. And so, you know, people just have to get with the change. We've got to give them the vision where we're going, and we'll get everybody in line. And then on personnel, you know, I will say it is a challenge. Ketchikan is a tough market to it's limited. It's hard to get people there. We do have open positions, still waiting to fill a few, and that's a challenge. And then, but more concerning is what we have on the license rate for short interest, every license category, and just every day it's like challenge. Can we get a crew member for this one? Can we do that? And thankfully, crews have been working over. But just to give an example, in the wheelhouse, all our license, across our license positions, were 10 short to crew the vessels. That brought, I think we have right now, I think 4 retirees that have come back to help. They can just work a limited amount of time. They have the pilotage we need, so that's important. Our biggest category was short, and we're minus 36. And so we have engineers just working over continuously to cover. We do get a few out of the hall. I think we have 8 right now out of the hall. It's all they've got. And it's the same that on the deck. We're short there too, a good amount. It's 8 DBs with the unlimited endorsement, right, and that's short as well. So it's a challenge all the way across. And it is a national problem. You know, we're doing what we can. We've got to make some recommendations. Keep working.
Thanks for that. Commissioner, you mentioned you wished employees would go through the normal chain, so that would be through the director, through you, instead of going directly to the AMOB. I'm given to understand that there might be some emails that were sent directly to the AMOB that might be inappropriate, and if you could pass those to the legislature, to me, to the committee, that would be really great. We'd like to get to the bottom of this. We agree, or I agree, with the need for the marine highway system to modernize, to find a way to fit into our infrastructure and the federal infrastructure. And I think at some point we are kind of mired in the past, and we need to find a way to move forward. And I suspect that personnel matters and circumventing the chain of command are probably not the most appropriate way. And if, to the extent that you can share them, redacted or not, that would be really great. With that said, Representative Nina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, I have 2 different topic areas, and I appreciate the presentation, especially a lot of the focus on transparency and being agile to public needs and comments on this bit. So my first topic area is related to the fiscal constraint aspect. And I love the dashboard. I love how accessible it is. And I'm curious that with the STIP, you know, it has to be developed with fiscal constraint, and I was looking at the FDA website. and fiscal constraint also includes looking at the committed or available revenue resources, and also ensuring that these needs are adequately operated and maintained. And so, you know, I think back to last winter where we had a lot of winter maintenance issues. I was walking through snow berms trying to get to the bus stop, and I know that people with disabilities, seniors, had a lot more adverse issues related to winter maintenance. So I'm wondering, with this dip, how do you assess maintenance for these new projects while understanding that there's maintenance of a lot of the existing roads and main arteries that are being used in Anchorage and throughout the state?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Mina, that's a great question. Yeah, and I too remember last winter. We got our fair share of complaints. So when we look at the STIF, one of the things we're looking at how we invest is also, you know, do we need to change things in terms of when we build infrastructure in the northern climate? One thing that we're working on right now and Mr. Mills is taking the lead on is having a snow summit here in the next month, and we're really going to get all of our MNO folks from all areas of the state together, and we're going to start having everybody share information. So some areas seem to be doing things a little differently than others, and we want to bring people together to say, hey, how are you guys doing to make this work versus somewhere else? Another step we're going to take is there's a complete street policy that Alaska hasn't fully engaged in, and complete streets is where you look at a road. And you have to look at all users. You know, you look at that and how you make it work for all users. I think when it comes to maintenance, you know, I know people, when you go around town, you'll see different ways the sidewalks are treated. I mean, some you'll see beautiful trees and light fixtures on the edge of the roadway on the sidewalk. That makes it hard for winter maintenance. So some of these things, I think, when we look at them, to have more of a focus when we look at how we accommodate all users, but the winter maintenance aspects, I mean, are there ways that we can get out there and maintain things faster and more efficiently? And that might be something, you know, as we go through a process to develop a complete streets policy that we take a hard look at. We've talked to other states already about this, states like Minnesota, Michigan, you know, Maine, these places where they get a lot of snow and ice. Even Arizona, of all places in the high elevations, they were real interested in this aspect. So that's another place we're going to go. We're also talking more about coming up for this winter season to have measures in effect. So when we get these weather events, like last year, I think it was like three subsequent storms that really hammered us, to have more of an ability to contract to bring on those additional resources when our resources are overwhelmed. Because we're built for a typical winter, you know, when we get these events for that short duration, we're not sometimes built for that. So we want to make sure we address that too. So we're looking.
Thank you. Through the chair, so second area that I'm interested in is just related to the public process, and I appreciate the answer on maintenance, and I'm excited about the snow summit. I would like to go. And so this is related to a lot of public feedback. I love how the dashboard, you can see a lot of the public comments come in. I'm looking at them throughout the committee. And I know that, you know, with my district in particular, we have the highest percentage of people who don't have access to a car, rely on public transit. We have a lot of urban commuters, and so I have a lot of folks that are very vocal about non-motorized access, and I also know that there have been some expressed concerns about the Safer Seward Highway, about the projects that Senator Kaufman talked about, and so I'm wondering, with this public comment and the deadline approaching on September 3rd, how do you integrate these public comments into the STIF in time for federal approval?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Mina. Yeah, another great question. I mean, we are trying. I think Deputy Commissioner Keith alluded to, we may need a little more time because of the volume of comments. And if that's the case, then we will do that. We want to make sure that, you know, we fully, you know, vet these comments and look through them. This is an important public process for us. And again, we're trying to listen to Alaskans on where they want to invest. And then we're also balancing things like with the safer Seward Highway. You know, that is one of our safety corridors. You know, high incidence of serious injury, crashes, and fatalities, and so we do need to address that. So there's always a balance in these things. But to understand the comments, I mean, a lot of people have a lot of good ideas. I've learned that. And so it's important to listen and then get the responses to make sure people, you know, understand that we're listening, so they understand that we're listening.
Thank you. One more follow-up.
So we're right at 12 o'clock. My buddy's checked with the LIO, and we're good to go past 12 if the commissioner and his group are willing to stay and answer questions. And if you all are willing, I'm game. So everybody up for that? Object now or hold your peace. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, so one more follow-up then. Is there a way for the public to utilize the dashboard to see how many projects, you know, related to like the Safer Seaward Highway have funds allocated to expanding roads and lanes and highways versus, you know, looking at rebuilding and prioritizing the safety for a lot of our existing roads? And this just goes back to the public comments and concerns that I've heard from constituents, bikers, public transit users about other high pedestrian accident prone areas like on the Tudor Highway or on the Tudor Road or Gamble and Ingra, you know, I'm at the mouth of the Glen, et cetera.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Mina, maybe I'll ask Deputy Commissioner Keith to come up for this one, because this might, you might have an idea here that we hadn't thought about yet. So,
for the record, Catherine Keith, through the chair, Representative Mina, yeah, if you think it, we can likely create it in the dashboard. So I really appreciate that idea. I think absolutely we can create a couple of different mechanisms to help communicate the work type, whether it is a significant reconstruction or if there's modifications to a roadway for to support additional active transportation users. So I think we can create that. And the interesting tie-in that you mentioned is something that we haven't done yet, but we have a significant amount of safety data through another kind of isolated system, but being able to pull that out into our current plan would be really helpful. That might be something that takes a little bit more time, but I think there are some things that we can do to help your constituents understand, you know, where the funds are being spent in different types of construction, and they could comment on that if they have concerns or recommendations for any changes at that point. Thank you. I would love to see pedestrian crash data accessible at the dashboard. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, Senator Teal and then Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner, stepping back a minute to the earlier bit about tribal transportation projects. I know they're not currently in the STIP. You said the department is trying to get some awareness of what's out there. The number is striking, right? It looks like about, 10-15% bump potentially in what we look at as federal money coming to a DOT. In the past, there have been opportunities for transportation authorities to partner with tribes. Municipalities have done that very successfully. That is not something, and I'm talking about prior administrations, that is not something that DOT has executed. As I think back on the meetings with Secretary Buttigieg in Haines and the tribal consultations that he took part in there, I know that tribes are, and I look over your shoulder, Commissioner and Director Tornga, looking at trying to include marine miles in their tribal transportation inventories. Which would certainly increase both funding and opportunities to partner in a place where we could use every nickel to get the rust replaced, as one of the co-chairs said. Is there an effort going on to be able to partner with tribes in their tribal transportation program funding on comparable terms to DOT's partnerships with municipalities?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Keel, I'll let Deputy Commissioner Keith speak to the tribal transportation program, the information that we're learning, like you said, it's fascinating. When it comes to partnering with tribes right now, you know, we've had success in programs like our Winter Trails program. You know, we will provide grants to tribes to do these things. There are things that we've been able to do. You know, because so much of rural Alaska, that is the government entity in the community. There's not necessarily a city government that is formed or, you know, a function. So we have had some of those things, but it's really project-based, you know, on a case-by-case basis is how we look at it. We have been talking, you know, we do have a tribal liaison at the department, and we are talking about building that into more of a team. And so we have more resources there so we can start tackling these things, because when it comes to things like we're talking about project bundling, that would be huge for the state because there's a lot of funds there. But I'll let the Commissioner Key speak.
Yeah. Through the Chair, Senator Keel. So the information that we've been able to compile on the Tribal Transportation Program, this comes from like a federal registry where we can understand the amount of funds that have been coming into the state, and those are primarily through discretionary grants. But we are, through our statewide transportation improvement program, required to include our tribal programs and projects on our SIF. I think that's a wonderful thing because we're going to get a chance through this process to just have a much better look at transportation infrastructure in general so that we can coordinate our resources more efficiently, especially when you look at some of the more geographically isolated areas. We can find like projects that are happening, whether they've been awarded through discretionary grants or part of a long-range plan, and then be able to have contractors work together, even if there's different fund sources. It's going to benefit the community all the more. So the information, you will see some of these projects added, especially as you close up the public comment process. So the next iteration of data will include, you know, some of those projects that we've been able to identify. And really the biggest part of the problem is just trying to find where the information is and then get it into the same format. And sounds like a simple problem, but it takes a data modernization and innovation office to figure it out sometimes. So we do understand there's lots of funding coming in federally for tribes. So if we can support them in project delivery, or if we can merge funding sources in order to help accomplish the goals, and that would be what we'd be eager to support and figure out.
Mm-hmm. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I'd like to go back to a little bit in the presentation. You were talking about workforce and the fact that construction is good paying jobs, things like that. The concept you brought up over that cemetery road where you're using it as a workforce training project, I like that concept. I'd like to see more employers in the private sector, honestly, using that type of concept. But it does worry me a little bit when we're talking on the planning side. I want to see us, you know, I know we need to be planning our projects around our workforce and around our workforce development, you know, for example, not trying to put so many projects in at once that we don't have the workforce to handle it. But I'm also a little bit worried that we could just as easily go down the path of, well, we're going to have some of these projects, not because the projects themselves make good sense in terms of economic development or safety or resiliency, but we want to do these projects because it provides jobs for people for the next couple of summers. That worries me a little bit, especially coming from a state agency. I was hoping you could comment on that a little bit.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Myers. Yeah, I don't believe there's any intent here to as like a just a jobs program. This is really focused on, you know, getting people the qualifications and the experience so they can enter the workforce and do all the other work that we do. You know, one thing with this Hughes model that was pretty neat was, you know, these folks, we all got together in the community hall, and there were probably 40, 50 people that were working or had been working, and they were asking, what's next? You know, how do I go get my CDL? How do I go, you know, get more experience so I can start? I'm getting excited about it. I like construction. I want to do more of it. Or, you know, I want to start looking at where the jobs are. So part of that was that piece. The other piece that, you know, we have to keep thinking about at the state, and especially at DOT in rural Alaska, we have, you know, 237 airports. I think, you know, two of them are internationals, but the majority of them are in rural places. And we bid that work to contractors. And it's getting harder and harder to find people that can maintain our airports in the rural areas. That's a real concern for us. So programs like this, you know, we're building 45 trained individuals that may be able to bid that work. So that's the intent. It's not a jobs program or anything like that. It's really focused on, hey, we recognize there's this crisis in Alaska. And we also, in the meantime, you see we're going for $6.7 billion or whatever the number is of work in the next 4 years that we want to make happen. But if we don't have the workers, that's a real problem. And so we want the infrastructure. We want these things. But I think we're just recognizing that. So, yeah, there's definitely more, you know, how we do this in the future will be a big part of this workforce development program. So more conversations.
Just to follow up on that, Mr. Chair, thank you for the response, Commissioner. I guess what I'm just concerned about here, and I think I've brought this up with you in previous meetings personally, is I don't want to see us putting the cart before the horse. Should we have, you know, be taking workforce development into account? Absolutely. But I don't want to see us picking projects just because they provide employment in my district for, you know, a couple of years and, you know, might help my reelection campaign, you know, things like that. I want to see us picking projects, especially when we're talking about longer-term plans like the STIP, you know, picking projects that are providing a long-term benefit, not just, a short-term employment bump.
Thanks, Senator Myers, and thanks, Commissioner, for that. I have, despite the fact that I have 7.2 miles that needs a rail bed installed, that would be a great workforce development project right here in the valley, but I have one final question, and then I think we'll wrap it up. We're 15 minutes past our limit here, so I'd like to know how competitive Alaska is in the discretionary grants arena. I heard a lot about that. You guys seem very, very optimistic, and take it away.
Well, Chair McCabe, I'm going to ask Deputy Commissioner Keith to throw me an assist on this one because she's been into the numbers. But we're being aggressive, there's no doubt, and going after these grant applications. I think we had teams over the past 2 weeks that were dedicated to this latest round. We're using every resource we've got to do these things. So we're definitely on that front. But in terms of success rates,
For the record, Catherine Keith. So Alaska in general has received $1.9 billion in discretionary grants up to July 7th, and that's out of the $52 billion that was awarded nationwide. So if you run the percentages on that as a state, not just transportation, but state as a whole, that's about 3.3% effective of getting that piece of the federal pie, so to speak. We've run the analysis at the department, so for what we've submitted as grants versus what's been awarded just for our own internal like continuous improvement processes, we get about 5% of the number of applications that we submit. We get about 5% of them awarded, and that equates to about 5% of the funding for those programs nationally. So we feel that we can do better, but the numbers do show us that we're going to win just by submitting as many grant applications as possible and continuing to just try to improve, because if all we're getting is 5%, then that's better than nothing. For example, the submissions that we sent in last night, close to $1 billion, if we get 5% of that, that's $50 million, and that's one of the projects that may have otherwise been pushed out into the out years. So we can be more competitive. I think it may be fair compared to what other states are seeing nationally. The numbers don't indicate that there's necessarily a bias, but it's hard for our state to be competitive just because you don't, when you're looking at the benefit cost analysis, it does come down to the numbers in population. So we are aware, though, that some of the nationwide criteria is shifting where it'll be more focused on like Justice 40 numbers that they're going to be providing us with to help incorporate that into the discretionary grant program, which for our state, they help us be more competitive, but we are looking at programs that maybe we haven't applied to. Can we be more successful there? Or programs that we're being very successful at, such as the Safe Streets for All program. We've received about 80% of the applications that we submitted, we received awards for. So perhaps we should be encouraging our communities to just go after that. funding program just because we're so successful at that. It's working for our state. So you can imagine we probably have a dashboard for that too. But we will continue to build our program and just continue to support our partners like AML and our consultant teams that have been helping to get these things submitted.
Thanks. So I have a ton more questions on floodplain docks and ice roads and all those fun things, but I think I can hold those till offline. So we're 20 minutes after, and I just want to say thanks for attending this joint committee, and thanks to all the committee members. I think we had two full committees here, and I appreciate everybody and everything that went into this, especially our staff. So.
Yes, thank you. I just also want to say thanks, and you know, there's a lot more going on than a committee meeting like this can show. I just say that I appreciate everyone in DOT, Marine Highway System. We're having a lot of conversations in the background around the improvements that are going on, and I just say I want to thank you for this meeting and also appreciate the engagement that we have ongoing throughout the year. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And seeing no further business before the committee, we will adjourn. Please let the record reflect that the time is